Today on Movie Rollers, we review Wish I Was Here and Magic in the Moonlight. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. I can see you guys were hungry. You've demolished the cookies that we had out prior to our last podcast. I'm still eating mine.
Yeah.
I feel
sick. How come?
Yeah. I'm savouring them. They're delicious.
They are. These are, for those who don't know, we are eating the Cravery cookies. Which
Rashmi got for her birthday.
I did, from my lovely friends Yazdi, Kathy, Michelle and Jeannie, with some beautiful flowers. And the cookies are delicious.
They're amazing.
Cravery is to cookies, is what Sprinkles is to cupcakes, I would say. Would you agree?
Yeah, actually.
You agree?
For those who may be listening outside of San Diego and Southern California area, Sprinkles is a cupcake chain that we have down here. I think they've got a branch in New York now.
I think they're national right now.
Yeah, I think they have, yeah.
Well, that's well deserved, because they reinvented, or at least popularized, the reinvention of the cupcake a few years ago. So yeah, I hope these guys do the same with these cookies, because they are off the charts good.
Yeah, so we've really had just one cookie each, really, because we've shared three. So we had lemon bar, cookies and cream milkshake, and red velvet. Yeah.
So,
and I will have to hide birthday cake, PB overload, and ultimate chocolate chip from Joe.
And they're so good.
I think they're good because they're not cookies.
I agree. They're more cakey.
They're very cakey.
Yeah.
But there are some interesting flavors, like pancakes and bacon, rosemary balsamic.
Nah.
Stop advertising for them.
And almond joyous.
They've got enough free publicity from us today.
They did. Yes. Yeah, send us a free box.
Yes, no. Or sponsor us.
Yes, but thank you to my adorable friends.
Thanks to Kathy. She was the one who made all the arrangements.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miss Kathy.
Okay, it's been a thunderous day here in San Diego.
The rain is lovely.
It's so bizarre. Like,
love
middle of July. We always have like July rain.
I love it.
But it was proper.
It was
proper lightning, thunder, and it went on for a good half hour.
And we're so not used to it here. I mean, it literally shook the house. The cats disappeared into my wardrobe and they were there for the next 3 hours, bless them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really refreshing to feel the rain. I wish it wasn't quite so sticky, because I always love that after a rainstorm when it kind of clears the air. I don't think we ever really get that purge here, but...
Yeah. Love it.
Two movies to talk about today, Wish I Was Here and Magic in the Moonlight. So where would you like to start?
I Wish I Was Here. I Wish I Was Here. I keep calling it I Wish I Was Here. I'm glad I'm here.
I'm glad you're here.
I wish it was Wish I Were Here. That's more grammatically correct. It just bothers me when I hear Wish I Was Here. Wish I Were Here.
Wished I Was Here.
Yes. Anyway, so Wish I Were Here, or Wish I Was Here, is the second film directed by Zach Braff, most famous from Scrubs on Television, and also from his directorial debut, Garden State, which came out a full decade earlier. Now he is, more than 10 years later, the 39-year-old Braff plays a guy in his mid-30s whose life is suddenly thrown into a swirl. Suddenly, he's faced with having to homeschool his two young kids. He has to decide if he wants to keep auditioning for roles to be an actor, even as he has a house, a home, a father, a wife, and kids to take care of. He has to try and be there for his wife and also take care of his dad, who is possibly dying. So, Wish I Was Here, as I mentioned, was directed by Zach Braff. It stars Kate Hudson as his wife, Mandy Patinkin as his dad, Josh Gad as his irresponsible brother, and Joey King and Piers Gagnon as his kids. The movie came out, I think, a week ago, and we were all there at the screening. So eager to hear what you guys thought about it.
So for once, this is a fairly sweet and positive view of suburbia. And this has really witty dialogue for the most part. I think the film's a little bit precious at times, and I think Zach Braff is trying a little too hard. But this is an effective movie, and it definitely had an impact on me. I really enjoyed this movie.
So, I mean, the movie clearly has some issues, but I kind of view it in the same way, and I kind of received it in the same way that I received the very recent movie that we saw, Begin Again.
Yes.
It's a movie that has some script problems, I think. That has some tonal issues. But for the most part, it was competent enough to keep my interest. Is this a great movie? No. And ultimately, I think I was a little disappointed with it, having been a huge fan of the Garden State movie 10 years ago. I really enjoyed that one a lot and was kind of hoping for that same level of enjoyment here. Didn't get that, but you know, I think for me there was a standout performance by Kate Hudson. I thought she did very well in this role, and to some extent carried some of the movie's inadequacies. So for me, a pleasant if not memorable movie going experience.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Zach Braff. I like everything about him. I like him on Scrubs. I, you know, he got into a lot of trouble with this movie because, you know, he started a whole Kickstarter campaign to fund this movie, even though he's earning millions every week from royalties out of Scrubs. And so there were a lot of people saying, you know, why should we pay him to, if he wants to make his own movie, he should find the funding for it. So he kind of got a bit of hot water about that. And that debate still rages on about, you know, what should be source funded, particularly when it comes to cinema. But getting back to the movie, unfortunately, like you, Joe, the movie came off as a disappointment to me. I think there's absolutely no doubt that, you know, he's very sincere. I mean, even the writing is very, very sincere. And you know, you feel like such a killjoy for finding something wrong with somebody who's so sincere about this whole, you know, he wrote it, he directed it, he acts in it. But I think the movie almost works, but then not quite. And I think it comes down to the story because I presumably it's autobiographical because, you know, it's very specific about, you know, what's the lead character is too similar to where he is right now in his life. And even then, it just does not all stick together. And it's very enjoyable. It's very well written. But for one thing, I think Begin Again is a far superior movie than this. But I think more than anything else, for me, there's a better version of this movie, which I saw at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's going to come out soon, I hope. It's called Alex of Venice. Mm. And it's got Elizabeth Winstead, and it's directed by... God, I always forget his name. But Alex of Venice is almost exactly the same story, but it's flipped in that what Zach Braff's character is going through in that movie, the female lead is going through it. And suddenly her life completely changes by an event and she has to suddenly take care of her dad and her kids and her crazy sister shows up. And that movie is just so much more heartfelt. It's so much more genuine and authentic and so forth. But be that as it may, again, I'm really struggling with this movie because I want to give it an 8 out of 10. I want to give it a 9 out of 10. And I think the last half hour of the movie really worked for me. I wish the early part of it had as well.
Yeah, there have been a lot of movies where, you know, children are called upon to look after their aging or ill parents, and I think they're always done a little bit too seriously. So I like the fact that although this was about a child undertaking that journey of a parent falling ill, the thing that came that I think saved it for me was the fact that it challenges ideas about faith and religion in a really positive way that I think we can all relate to, especially that dynamic that you have in families where some people are more religious than other people and how that all plays out. So that whole questioning of religion and faith and culture versus indoctrination, it was a really interesting dialogue that I haven't seen done before. So I really enjoyed that. And I like that it was in a fairly non-preachy way, but I also like that whole dynamic of, you know, the ideas and hopes that our parents have for us versus the things that we believe we should be doing. Mm-hmm. And that dynamic of parent and child as well, both as we see it between him and his parent and then him as a parent to his children. So that's the pieces I think that saved the movie for me and made it really enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain reality to what, you know, he's brought real life to the screen here, and I think it is extensively autobiographical. You can just tell by the honesty about, you know, through which some of the characters speak. And I think to that end is where one of the failings of the movie lay with me, which was the character wasn't particularly inspiring. He was a bit of a
jerk.
He's a bit of a... Yeah, he was. I mean, he relied so heavily on his wife to carry the family and all the responsibilities. And, you know, we've seen films about that kind of character, but I think this story requires that we had some empathy, some willingness to see him prevail here. And I didn't have any of that. The whole movie, I just felt that this guy was a real douche. And so I think that made it a little hard when the movie is trying to be so kind of heartwarming and precious about the meaning of family and you know, what it is to deal with, you know, a difficult situation with a terminally ill parent and that kind of thing. So it was, if the central character had been a bit more likable, I think I would have bonded with the movie in the way that I think he wanted us to do. But he was so douchey for so much of the movie that I couldn't deal with that.
I see exactly what you mean. It was a bit of an issue for me, but not too much, because I think it was actually more interesting to see his arc. Like, he starts off this particular way, and then, you know, for him to get to the place where he does. For me, there were two major failings to it, the way I see it. One is that it was too twee. It was so precious. I mean, I wish he had exercised a little bit more restraint. Almost every scene that he has with his kids, you know, nobody's kids speak like that, first of all. And then there's too many scenes about the kids finding their inner being, and, you know, too many shots of, you know, silhouettes of kids against rocks while the ocean, you know, while the water rages. So I don't know. It kind of got overbearing. And that whole arc about his irresponsible brother, not a piece of it worked for me. It just seemed too weird. But anyway, and then the second bit that really bothered me is this worked beautifully in Garden State. And it's the reason why people remember Garden State right now is the soundtrack.
Yeah.
This movie is overproduced with music. I mean, there's constantly like the sappy, you know, coffee. And I like sappy coffee house music, but there's sappy coffee house music playing constantly to the movie. This is not an episode of Grey's Anatomy. I mean, he needs to really exercise some restraint there as well. So that kind of bothered me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a sign of a novice director, where you think you can't quite create the mood you want through the writing and the screen. So you force it on the audience by selecting a piece of music, which will get you there quickly. And I say that as if I've directed 100 movies. I mean, I see it as a device, and it should never feel that way. And I felt exactly the same way as you. You know, like, you know, cue the romantic music for the romantic moment, cue the dramatic music for the, you know, the emotional moments. And it was a little too forced.
Yeah, I mean, it can be very powerful. It can really take a scene and raise it one more level by having the right music at the right time. But not all the time.
Right.
You know, so anyway.
It worked for me. No, it worked for me. I think if you're in the right mood to receive the movie, it worked overall for me.
And, you know, not to poop all over the movie, I think one of the best things that Zach Braff did with this movie was to have the good sense to hire Kate Hudson to play his wife.
Yes.
And, you know, you would have asked me 5-10 years ago about Kate Hudson, and I was like, you know, please be gone. You know, I never understood Kate Hudson. I never understood why she was in cinema other than being, you know, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's daughter. And, you know, even in Almost Famous, I thought she was overrated.
Oh, no.
But I agree.
You're wrong about that, both of you.
But now two movies in a row with her criminally overlooked performance in A Reluctant Fundamentalist last year, and in this movie, my God, she's on fire. She's so good in this movie. There's a scene she has here with her father in the hospital, which could have gone wrong. It could have been every episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Yes.
Again. And it's so perfect. And it's not because it's exceptionally well written. It's because of Kate Hudson and Mandy Patinkin just doing what good actors do. Somebody, please give Kate Hudson a big movie role, like right now.
I have to say, Yazdi, I'm in the same camp. I don't particularly like Kate Hudson. I was so sick of seeing her in every romantic comedy. Right. But she really brought it. This was a really good role, and it was really understated. She played it really well. Very, very good portrayal of the wife, especially in some difficult situations.
Yeah. She could have been the bitter, it would have been easy to play the bitter, you know, tormented wife, but she never goes that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else to say on this one?
No, I'm ready to score.
Okay, Yazdi.
Oh, Zach Braff, I so wanted to give this movie an 8 out of 10, but even then, this movie is sincere and it's honest, and even though it overdoes a few things, it's not a bad movie at all. It's actually a pretty decent film. I give it 7 out of 10.
Joe?
I mean, I don't hold it in such high esteem yesterday or anything. I had a lot more trouble with it because of the things that we've discussed. And, yeah, that said, I didn't hate it, but I'm going to be generous. I was thinking 5. I'll bump it up to a 6 today just...
Because you've had cookies.
Because I'm on a sugar high. That's exactly right. So, you know, it's the kind of movie that I would recommend anyone watch, but I won't tell you to run out and see it.
So I think I liked it the most. I was glad I was there because I think this was a charming, sweet film with a good, wholesome message packaged in a nice dramatic bow. And I mean, and as in dramedy, you know, it wasn't a comedy. It didn't make me belly laugh that much. But it wasn't, you know, all out drama either. So I really enjoyed this movie. I'm with Yazdi, 7 out of 10.
I found that this movie, just kind of like Begin Again, had this odd tone to it where you think it's kind of family friendly and then suddenly it slaps you in the face with something that's totally not.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's the influence of the, you know, the Judd Apatow kind of comedy where we were all, you know, because those films all have that packaging and then you go into them and you realize they're far edgier than that. And I don't know if this was an attempt to be edgy, but, you know.
It doesn't work.
It annoys me. I think it limits the audience. B, it reduces the amount of people I would recommend it to. I mean, you know, this would be a movie I'd recommend my parents watch, you know, say for a scene where, you know, the guy gets caught masturbating and it's just like, anyway.
Was that a warning that you were giving out there? There is a scene.
Just a comment. I mean, I think it's a tonality. It's a trend that I'm seeing. It's a trend that I'm seeing, you know, more and more where I think people think you have to have this bite to the humor in order to, you know, in order to be perceived well. And I don't know that that's what Apatow does. I think he has a different view on life and we see the world through his eyes. But when other directors that see the world more benignly throw in one or two of those, it's like a shark bite from, you know, the kiddie pool. It's like, where the hell did that come
from? Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I have nothing against scenes where somebody's caught masturbating. That's okay. There is a place for that scene in a particular kind of movie, but there's such a sweetness about this whole movie and there is a wistfulness about the whole movie. And then to just randomly throw in one or two things which seem to belong to some other movie, it doesn't work. It actually does the movie disservice.
So anyway, I just wanted to put that in at the end because we didn't talk about it during the review. So let's move on to movie number 2, which is Magic in the Moonlight. And
so for the last 30 years, Woody Allen has been, like it or not, making a movie every year. And it's like getting a gift from your aunt. Sometimes it's a great gift. It's perfect. And sometimes it's socks. So
note to self, no socks for Yazdi at Christmas.
No socks for me on Christmas. But here is Woody Allen again in 2014. After a string of, more highs than lows. You know, he did Midnight in Paris, and then last year he did Blue Jasmine, and then here he is with Magic in the Moonlight. And this time, the story is set around, in not contemporary times, but much earlier. It's set around a time when an Englishman is brought in. He is brought in to find out if a woman who claims to be a clairvoyant might actually be swindling a family of, you know, of their riches. And he's recruited to fly into the Côte d'Azur where this family lives and find out if this girl is for real or if she's trying to embezzle them. The movie stars Colin Firth, Emma Stone, Hamish Linklater, Catherine McCormack, Marcia Gay Harden, and Jackie Weaver. And of course, it's directed by Woody Allen, although this time, for good reason, Woody Allen is only behind the camera, not in front of it. Rashmi, you're the only one who's seen it. I do want to see it. I hope it's more Midnight in Paris and less To Rome with Love. Tell me
I'm interested. And I'm not the biggest Woody Allen fan, so if you could rush me when you make your comments, consider me.
Oh, so hard.
Only because, you know, my favorite Woody Allen movies are, Match Point and Blue Jasmine. I didn't really find much there for me in Midnight in Paris, and certainly a lot. I know I'm
off with his head.
I'm a minority. I know
off with his head.
And you know, I find his earlier works hit or miss. So, you know, give us that. I can see that you've written copious notes here, so go for it.
And I did write this with both of you in mind, actually, because okay. because I actually thought, how would I share this with Yazzie and Joe, given none of you were at the screening and I literally had to be there. So I literally have butterflies in my stomach as the lights go down, because this is such an anticipatory event for me. I love Woody Allen more than I love Britt Marling, and so it's hard for my bias not to take over. So, Joe, to answer your question specifically, this doesn't have quite the depth of Allen's more serious movies like Blue Jasmine or Match Point, but Yazdi, to your point, it's not as empty as From Rome with Love. Okay. This is more of a frivolous, frothy, fun frolic, and I really enjoyed the movie because the period is well caught, the acting is really good, the score is wonderful, and the costumes are breathtaking. So I really enjoyed this. And I found, as I was actually writing my notes, recalling things and enjoying it even more. So I think as I was writing my review, I think this went up in points. Mm. But I think the good thing this has going for it, which I think From Rome with Love didn't, Yazdi, was the story's good and it keeps you guessing. And I think this does have more of that fantasy element that Woody Allen often intertwines into his movies. You know, he's not afraid of playing with fantasy and the realms of like fairies and fairy dust and pixies. That's not to say there are fairies and pixie dust in this movie, but you know what I mean. He intertwines that fantasy element very well. It's not belly laugh out loud funny, but it's incredibly amusing and it's just beautiful to look at. It's so well filmed. And I just found myself smiling the whole way through. And there are some really, really funny moments, but it's not laugh out, you know, like belly, you know, bent over double funny though.
So after having worked on this film, Woody Allen already has, you know, he's always working two films ahead, but yeah. His next movie also has Emma Stone.
Correct.
So is this his new news?
I mean, she's just delightful to watch. I mean, she's perfectly captured this character, this very light, frothy 1920s flapper girl-esque.
I can see her in a Woody Allen.
She's got that sensibility.
Yeah, she does. To me, she seems to have the same. Who's Alan's muse from the
Scarlett Johansson?
No,
like Mia Farrow, Diane Keaton. The older
Diane
ones.
Diane Keaton, thank you. Yeah, gosh, I can see her having that kind of Keaton. Yeah, she's got. She can do funny. She can do serious, and she's got a wonderful screen presence.
Yes,
you know. And you pay attention to her.
And she's mesmerizing, beautiful to watch. Mm. I mean, the costumes, I was gasping every time the scene changed because, well, first of all, I love this era. You know, I love the 20s. I love any film which has the 20s, and I love anything set in the Côte d'Azur. I mean, this is just beautiful to look at. It's like a drink of the best, you know, cocktail. You just don't want it to finish. It's just beautiful to look at. And I think the good thing about Emma Stone is that she can hold her own against someone like Colin Firth. And Colin Firth is just amazing again in this. I mean, he's so good. It's a little bit more like The King's Speech, his character, but he's got this real edge and he's a real no-nonsense character. And it's really fun to watch him. He's all the comedy really comes from Colin Firth. Not because he has the funniest lines, but he's in the funniest situations. And so it's just an enjoyable caper.
You know what I want to see? I want to see a Woody Allen film where the male lead is a younger actor. You know, shouldn't Colin Firth be playing her dad?
You know,
it's a romantic comedy with Emma Stone. There's like, a 20-year difference between them?
Yeah, and it's rather like in Begin Again when we had Keira Knightley with Mark Ruffalo. For some reason, it works because of the era they're in. And I think where you had that older gentleman type with a younger woman. And it's not smutty or slutty or
it's a case of art imitating life here.
Maybe
the way that Woody Allen's world works,
maybe, but it wasn't repulsive to watch. It wasn't like, oh, what the hell is happening, because it's not even a traditional romantic comedy in that sense. So it kind of takes you by surprise, but it seems to work. And I think You know, on first look, this does look more frothy than substantive, but I think if you look a little bit deeper, the story actually provides a very interesting narrative on the things that we want to believe in and the things we need versus what's actually happening, and that's the premise of the movie. And I think, it's smart because it does it in a non-preachy way, and it asks some really good existential questions again. But it has this lightness of something like Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. It feels very ethereal, but there's actually way more to that than you expect. And I kind of got that same feeling, like A Midsummer Night's Dream is one of my favorite Shakespeare plays. And it's because it's got that kind of fantasy, strange, everyone being lost in a forest. But actually, when you analyze the play, it's got a lot of depth on different levels.
Some of the criticisms I'm reading of it are for that kind of reason. It seems that the movie is being picked on for being kind of fizzles out, loses some steam as it goes along. I mean, would you say that that's fair, or...
It's not unfair.
I'm actually going to temper everything you're saying today with, you know, my knowledge that you're a huge Woody Allen
exactly.
fan. So, you know, Woody Allen could direct an episode of, I don't know, Real Housewives, and you'd think it's like the best thing ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, Joe. No, I think you've hit the nail on the head. But it's not an unfair comment. I mean, it does, I would say just before the last act begins, there is a little bit of, a downturn, not a downturn, but a slowing. But for me, I was able to temper that with how beautiful the film is to look at. I mean, and you just don't get bored of the beautiful cinematography, the beautiful locations. I mean, the color, the saturation of the color, these amazing costumes, the sound, you know, the score. So I don't disagree with that comment, but then there were other things to keep me interested at that point in time. And it ends very nicely and appropriately. Okay, have I convinced you guys to watch this yet?
Yeah, I want to watch it, for sure.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I think just from what you've said, this movie has more interest for me than, you know, To Rome With Love, which was the sandwich movie between Midnight and Blue Jasmine. But it's not a run out and see for me, simply because I think it's a little more of the dreamy Alan.
I agree.
That I don't connect with quite so much.
I think if it's on in the back of an aeroplane, Joe, you should watch it. But I agree. I don't think it's a rush out much. Yazdi, on the other hand, I think you'll get a lot more out of this. So I'll sum up by saying, if you like Downton Abbey or Woody Allen indiscriminately, then rush out and see this. If you're more of the ilk where you like the deep thinking man's Woody Allen, then exercise caution. For me, this was a delightful folly and it was magic all the way. I'm going to give this one a 9 out of 10.
No, not a 9.
Yeah. It was already a 7 or an 8.
You've already given Midnight a 10, I think.
Yeah.
To Rome With Love a 9.
Yeah.
Blue Jasmine certainly got a 9.
Yeah.
So, yes, you said that, no, with shock, and I don't know that it's that shocking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think walking out of the cinema, it was definitely a 7 or an 8. And like I said, as I was doing my notes and thinking about what it was that I liked about the movie, it actually increased in my estimation, because there is this other level to it. I think it's one of those that comes off as frothy. I don't think it's as smart as Midnight in Paris, which is just incredible, blow my mind.
I
mean, Midnight in Paris is an absolute 10 out of 10 for me. This is not quite of that...
That's why I was surprised.
Amazingness, but it's very good, and it's much, much better than from Rome With Love. I mean, just more superior than from Rome With Love.
Yeah, I think, God forbid, if something bad should happen to Woody Allen,
I'll cry.
But I think that's when people realize, you know, even his misses are kind of interesting. And I just like that there is something so workmanlike about him. He moves past these horrible, you know, personal... what happened last year with his daughter accusing him, and he just keeps on working, and he has the best actors, and Sony Classics announced that they have given him funding for the next 4 movies, you know, so he has set up this whole new model for himself in which he's working, and he just spits them out.
He's so prolific. I mean, to me, I don't understand how he can keep coming up with these ideas, and they're different. Every movie has... You know,
and they don't always work, but he keeps on going. Yeah,
But I think they always make money, in part because of, you know, the them being Woody Allen movies.
No, because...
they always attract enormous talent.
Yeah, because actors don't get paid for it. That's part of their condition.
What's that?
Yeah, I mean they get paid, but they don't get millions.
Right,
so when Cate Blanchett shows... No. When Cate Blanchett shows up, she takes a significant cut. Maybe she gets paid 20% of what she normally gets paid. Because his movies just don't have that kind of budget.
He's very efficient. All of the, you know, we watched this really good interview with Cate Blanchett some time before, and I think it was actually with the costume maker of Blue Jasmine, you know, because the costumes for Cate Blanchett were so high end, and the thing I noticed obviously was the Hermes Birkin bag, and apparently, you know, they borrowed a lot of that stuff, and as soon as the movie was done, all of that stuff went back. Right. So they're, you know, films on a shoestring. I think the profound thing about Woody Allen, though, is that even though every film is very, very different, they're always either existential type questions, you know, what we as people need to live our lives, or they're about really everyday aspects of relationships, some of those difficult questions in relationships. I mean, Blue Jasmine for me was very much about relationships and people. So I think that's his success. He somehow manages to capture something about people and the way we live and what we need so incredibly well. And sometimes they're comedic and sometimes they're silly and sometimes they're profound. And then there's the, you know, the amazing Midnight in Paris.
Twitter.com/movierollers, Facebook.com/movierollers, and of course our main website, movierollers.com. Do keep engaged with us. We love hearing from folks between podcasts. And if you've heard something on the podcast that you have an opinion on, write in mail@movierollers.com. We would love to get your emails. Until our next episode, I guess it's too many movies and too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.